$25,000 for participating charities last year. Visit rhythmandblueshalfmarathon.com for more information or to sign up to run for a charity today. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Jonathan Kraft.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. And tonight, in our second hour, we have something new, Lestopia Radio. But first, the purpose of the Houston Intersex Society is to provide support and help to those who were born intersexed, hermaphrodite, eunuch, etc. The Houston Intersex Society also creates awareness through education and informal meetings on the first Tuesday of every month at 7:30 p.m. at the Houston TG Center on Pacific Street. In news wrap, Italy's Supreme Court has declared that same-gender couples can raise children just as well as heterosexual couples. Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court has announced that it will hear oral arguments on the Proposition 8 case March 26th and on the DOMA case the following day. And the Episcopal National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. has announced that it will soon begin hosting the weddings of lesbian and gay couples. In the feature segments from This Way Out, an interview with author Janet Mason about LGBT baby boomers caring for their aging parents and Janet's experiences in particular. Also, Katie Cook and Maggie Young quit their jobs to spend a year as sapphic nomads traveling the globe in search of LGBT people and material for a documentary film. They promised to send This Way Out audio postcards from the road, and they sent their first late last year from Samoa. Their latest comes from the northern steppes of Mongolia. At 10 o'clock, it's Lestopia Radio. The first guest tonight will be the Celesbian, Sarah Golden, from The Voice on NBC Radio. Also, hear behind-the-bar interviews of the lovely ladies at The Usual. And, Jack, that's a neighborhood club.
Well, we'll see how it all works out.
Yes, it's going to be an hour long, and it's going to be an experimental first for us and for
Queer Voices.
Well, for yes. Queer Voices and
it's
for Lestopia.
They're Queer Voices.
In reality, right. Every week is an experiment for us.
Yes. Well, that's
true. It's an experiment that we're on the air. Actually, you know, let's be honest. Pacifica is an experiment.
That's true.
Yes. Which they never thought would work. And as much as they try to, you know, hack us from the right side, we're still here, strangely enough.
Yes.
And speaking of which, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be asking for your pledges. We think that we do a decent radio show and hope you support us. I know sometimes it's a little bit difficult because we're on so late, but we're also on iTunes, and you can go to the station website and download our show that you can listen to it at your time. So, you know, it all works out. You know, we're beginning the award season. The Golden Globe Awards were on last night, and pretty interesting. Jodie Foster really sort of made it public, as most people already knew, that she was a family, which was interesting. And one of my favorite lines when the two co-hosts, Tina Fey. And I'm sorry, I just lost it. But they said, that's Hillary Rodham Clinton's her husband was on.
Meaning
the president.
Interesting.
And we'll probably talk about this next week, but there's a lot of really good political movies out right now, which, you know, if you like movies and you're into politics, this is the season to see so many of them, because it really sort of gives you a perspective that you might not get otherwise. So let's go on with the show.
Let's get it started.
Ooh,
it in the way that you looked at me tonight. I can tell there is something on your mind. You can tell me, baby, it'll be alright. Tell me it'll be alright now. Don't break my heart. Take me with you. Don't leave me standing here on my own. Right from the start, take me with you. You are the one place that I call home. Turn to gray. Will you bring back the sun from yesterday? Don't make a sound, I'm afraid of what you'll say. I'm afraid of what you'll say now. Don't break my heart. Take me with you. Don't leave me standing here on my own. Right from the start, take me with you. You are the one place that I call home.
That was Haberdashery from 2011, and the name of the song, Don't Break My Heart. This is Queer Voices.
Hi, I'm Summer Iman.
And Jennifer Renee.
And we're here with Kuma and Mo to talk about a new group that's been formed called the Houston Intersex Society, or THIS. And so, Kuma, Mo, tell us a little bit about what this organization does and what's the reason for its foundation.
What the Houston Intersex Society does is kind of create a space that offers support and education for people who are intersex, DSD, which means some people prefer that term, which means disorder of sexual development, or some people even prefer the term hermaphrodite, which sometimes is considered outdated. We have meetings the first Tuesday of every month at the TG Center, and we also do a lot of different educational panels and different things like that around Houston. So we're kind of multidimensional in what we offer.
I've got a question, and this goes out because I remember the first time I met an intersex person. They explained it to me. There may be people out there that don't get it. I mean, the ancient term hermaphrodite, which goes back to the Greeks and all, that has an idea. So what is the definition we look at now?
It's a lot broader than hermaphrodite, and so it is a medical condition where your body is either physically kind of in between male and female, or your chromosomes don't match your external body. For some people, that means their genitalia is ambiguous, that it presents somewhere between male and female. For some people, they may externally look completely female and have XY chromosomes, or vice versa. And then we also include people who are born eunuch or different things like that. Some people have different genital dysgenesis sort of, or conditions like aphalia, where they have XY chromosomes and they're born without a penis, or, you know, different things like that.
Mm-hmm. What happened, I remember, I don't remember, I was there, but I don't remember it. I was small. When I was growing up, and so to full disclosure, my last relationship was with intersex person. And so when she, who she identifies as a she, was growing up, they closed her up. And, you know, just, you know, made it, you know, the doctors assumed a certain thing at the time by confronting the parents, because the parents were terrified. Oh, my God. Everybody asks, is it a boy or a girl? And you go, we don't know yet. And which is terrible sociologically for all of them. So the doctors or surgeons at the time recommended, you know, you have a 50-50 chance, I guess. So you're about to say.
Well, essentially, with that being the case, I guess the protocol, since Dr. John Money, he was the psychologist who, if you're familiar with As Nature Made Him, essentially, for most intersex babies, they were actually converted or had normalization surgery performed on them to make them appear and look as a normal female. And essentially, they gave them, like you said, they closed up because, of course, they were actually basically as little infants operated on without any consent. You can't consent if you're an infant. And on top of that, they were actually, of course, I guess, brought up in shame, essentially. So it's...
Well, and that was what happened. The surgeons and the doctors pressured her parents to make a decision right there.
Right. And then,
in those first few hours.
Unfortunately, that's very common, and that's something that you're very right, is something that lingers, and that is something that creates a lot of shame and guilt. This, you know, something being done to you without your consent, or, you know, sometimes that even happens when intersex people are, you know, children, not infants, but children or teenagers, or sometimes even adults, they'll have surgeries without their informed consent. Or they'll be told, oh, this is cancerous or something else, and they'll remove a part of their body that may not actually pose a problem. But along with that, there, you know, you do get have a lot of shame and a lot of stigma and a lot of guilt, but there's a lot of secrecy with that too, because these are things that, you know, regardless of whether an intersex bodied person has had some sort of, you know, say, quote unquote, normalization surgery, just the idea of being intersex so often is something that's kept hidden or kept secret, and it's something that we are brought up that it's something we're supposed to be ashamed of. It's, we are not normal, or you're not acceptable as you were born. And so that's something that, as a group, as the Houston Intersex Society, has these meetings and offers educations and different things like that. We try to let people know that they don't have to feel that way, that their body is okay. There's actually a project we just worked on making a film for called the Interface Project, and their little quote that goes along with there is, no body is shameful. So,
like, what is the estimate? I know it's a bunch of different myriad of conditions. What's the estimated frequency for children born with an intersex condition?
The most common number thrown out there statistically is 1 out of 2,000.
I've also heard anywhere, you know, and that's something too. It varies. I've heard one in 2,000. I've heard 1 in 100. I've heard, you know, tons of different things like that. 1 in 1,000. The thing is, we don't know. Mm-hmm. Some people are born and you know. Mm-hmm. Other people don't find out until later on in life. Some people don't find out ever. So we don't know. Like, that's the best answer I can give is we don't really know.
Well, wouldn't the pressure to keep it quiet if they did? I was incensed by the term normalization surgery. Right. Being a trans person, I take real offense to that. But the fact is that they shame the parents. So do you, you know, you can't, you know, we're going to do this surgery and you don't tell them anything and come back when they're in puberty. How do they get away with this? What is it that we can do as a society or as a group or a community to help the intersex individual or the person with ambiguous genitalia?
Or any kind of intersex infant for that matter. Essentially, the child's best advocate is actually the parents. They have the right to, of course, advocate for the health of their child, but more so, they have the right to take any kind of actions they see fit, legally or what have you, for taking care of their child. So basically, they can look online, Google support groups for the child that's intersex, and essentially find other parents that have been through the same situation as they have, and find help from other parents and also from intersex adults as well, and that helps a great deal, actually.
So, have you been doing any outreach to the medical community trying to change their attitudes?
Yes, actually, a couple months ago, we actually participated in a medical standardized patient program at Baylor College, and essentially, we did a sensitivity training with them, and it went really well, really, really well.
That's excellent. That's really great. So, have you ever, what is the need you kind of perceive of this group? Like, how many would you say you would ballpark figure, you know, in Houston?
I have no idea.
I guess it's, yeah, because the statistics are so varied. This, mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you outreach to the community, to the intersex community?
As of right now, we have the website. We have, you know, this monthly...
What is that website?
TheHoustonIntersexSociety.com. This.
Okay.
We have the monthly meetings. But what we also do is we hold, you know, Intersex 101. And what that is not necessarily geared towards people who are intersex, but people who are not. And so that's part of the education. We recently submitted a workshop proposal for the Philadelphia Trans Health Conference, specifically targeted towards people who are intersex but are also transgender identified in some way. Again, we made the video for the Interface Project, which is a national and international project. And it's really just doing whatever we can to reach out in as many different ways as possible. Because, you know, even doing this radio show, there's going to be people hearing this that, you know, maybe didn't know, oh, there's someone else like me. I know when I was younger, I originally came out as queer first, before I ever told anybody it was intersex. And recall, you know, being in my closet, literally and, you know, I guess metaphorically, at home listening to this radio show just so I could hear someone else, right?
Right.
And so something like that stays in the back of my mind. Like, somebody somewhere is going to either hear this radio show, they're going to pick up a magazine, Outsmart, and see that we host a meeting. They're going to, you know, see the website. They're going to see our video online. And just the fact that they know there's other people there is huge.
Now, where do you hold these Intersex 101?
Anywhere.
Give it all to me.
Anywhere where somebody will have one. Mo recently was at 14 Pews. They screened a film. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes, we actually did a Q&A with 14 Pews after the XXY. It's essentially a film about an individual born with XXY. I believe so. I don't remember which condition it was, but essentially... Yes. After the film, there was a lot of great questions from the audience. But actually, to go back on the video part a little more, we keep on saying video, mm-hmm. We don't really elaborate. The video is actually from the Interface Project. If you've ever heard of It Gets Better campaign, where, you know, they're geared towards young adults that are either gay, but this one's more geared towards young adults that are like intersex, so that way they can essentially see for themselves that someone like them is, they've gotten through this, they found support, they found they've connected with others, and more so they can kind of start to creep out of the isolation and shame that so many have lived with for so long.
So I know that intersex is included in the very expanded versions of LGBTQ, QIA.
Alphabet soup.
Alphabet soup, yeah. Yes. It's a very long expansion. To listeners that may not see the immediate connection, could you talk about like how the intersex community relates to the rest of the GLBT community?
I think what's important to really recognize is that some do and some don't. And so, like, our advocacy for being here is for those that do, but also we know that gender is different than sexuality, but how we, you know, define our gender can influence how we decide to label our sexuality. But when you, your body is not specifically one or the other, you know, it becomes a little cloudy on, you know, instead of saying, you know, well, I'm, you know, interested in these people, the concern is more, will these people be interested in me? Or, you know,
it's like you're a nation without any land. I don't know.
Or a person without a country.
Exactly.
Yeah, like a transgender lesbian.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and I think, too, that's why some intersex people do, you know, identify or kind of feel more comfortable being in a transgender community. And again, some don't. So, I mean, it's a very, we are our own spectrum. Within a spectrum, it's really, really fascinating to see that some people are, oh, I'm a man and I'm into women and that's it. Or where other people are like, well, I'm a little bit of both and I'm into this, or, you know. So I the way that I like to present it to people is by looking at people and saying, are you a man or are you a woman? And then after whatever they say, I say, how do you know? Because is it genitalia? Is it chromosomes? Is it how you feel? Which kind of, you know, kind of fits into to transgender as well. But, you know, really the basis of what is sex, what is gender, if it's, you know, a spectrum, as...
Which is the challenge with the other than LGBT community. I'm not going to go to the whole alphabet. Straight folks. Mm-hmm. Anyway, when you go to those, that really confuses them, because it's easier and simpler in many people's world just to think, well, there's only male and female, and, you know, I don't want to hear about anything else. Now, how do we break through to them to really get them to engage in, I'm intersexed, you know, when you say something like that? First of all, you've got to take, from the experience of being transgender, you've got to explain to them what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a spectrum of physiological things having to do with the body. How do you do that? How do you engage? Huma?
That's a tough task to ask there. Essentially, I think the actual best way to actually get anyone motivated is by actual, basically actually personally affecting them. So if they have like a family member within their family that's actually affected, that's probably how they would actually look into that, or actually they really wouldn't care unless it actually happened to them, essentially. But I mean, it is important to still have outreach and advocacy, because it's still important, and especially with the you know, gay marriage things and such.
Kind of a more philosophical question, given, you know, your two experiences and your interactions with gender, do you have any feelings on gender being innate or societally, like, you know, put upon you? Or,
well, I definitely feel the pressures to conform.
They were sitting there looking at one another, negotiating who's going to say something.
I definitely feel the pressure of conforming to female. But essentially, you know, even if, regardless of which gender, quote unquote, you decide to choose, there's always, I guess, just human nature. Regardless of what role you decide to play, you're always going to question yourself. So it's, seems very fluid to me.
Is the question that there are, that intersexed means that you are neither male nor female, is that the general way people think about it, or is it that they're both?
I think it can actually be, depending on who's interpreting it, some people see it as you're both, some people see it as you're neither, some people just think you're weird, and that's more what we're focused on trying to break. Is not trying to decide, you know, are you both, are you neither? It's just, hey, we're people, you know.
And people who want their dignity and their self-expression validated, which you absolutely deserve to have.
As everybody does. That's, you know, that's the big thing is, you know.
As we're getting along here, what is the message you want to deliver to those people who may be listening to us, who either know someone or maybe are intersex themselves? What is it you want them to know?
You're definitely not alone. They're really awesome people that are creating community spaces for you, that there's education out there for your family, your parents, your teachers, your friends, and there are tons of people looking to connect with you to share experiences and to offer support.
Well,
essentially, just look and you'll find help, and just basically find support, essentially, just harping on that, find support, advocacy.
And so your organization meets when?
The first Tuesday of every month at the TG Center at 7 p.m.
And where can they find more information?
At the HoustonIntersexSociety.com.
Is there, y'all have a Facebook site?
Yes, the Houston Intersex Society.
See, I'm going to keep asking until I get all the information out of you. Okay.
And Twitter, and Sina Weiba, too, if you've heard of it, in China. So, or everywhere.
Oh, you have a Chinese Twitter handle? That's pretty cool.
Yes.
So have you actually done international stuff?
A couple of things with sister stations or sister organizations.
Very cool, very cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
This has been Summer Iman and Jennifer Renee talking with Kuma and Momo the Homo.
Thank you.
And this is Queer Voices.
People are afraid of their own mortality.
I guess so.
And that when you take care of a parent, you're looking at your own future.
Look, LGBT Center is the first and only LGBT human rights organization of Mongolia. At the moment, our focus is on legislation. We don't have any legislation to protect or any legal provision to protect the LGBT community members.
To This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Italy's top court supports same-gender parenting, tea leaves travel to Australia, and morning dawns for the LGBT movement in Mongolia. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Robert LeBlanc.
And I'm Pamela Brooks.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 12, 2013. LGBT people won significant victories this week in a variety of courtrooms around the world. Italy's Supreme Court declared on January 11th that same-gender couples can raise children as well as heterosexual couples. The case was brought by a heterosexual man against his former partner, who's now living in a lesbian relationship. He had challenged a lower court ruling that gave her sole custody of their child. Italian law continues to bar same-gender couples from adopting children, but the High Court concluded in this case that there is no scientific certainty or concrete evidence, but only prejudice, that living in a homosexual family is damaging for the growth of a child. Applauding what it called a historic verdict, the Italian LGBT rights group Arcigay said that children are brought up by love and not by their parents' sexual orientation. Roman Catholic Pope Benedict XVI has repeatedly railed against same-gender love and lesbian and gay families. Father Domenico Cingolini, a member of the influential Italian Episcopal Conference, told the Italian news agency ANSA that you can't build a civilization through court rulings. It is not up to a court of law to say what the best situation is for a child. The rights of LGBT people in Italy, including marriage and adoption, are hot-button political issues ahead of a general election in February. Current Prime Minister Mario Monti said last week that it was up to Parliament to deal with those issues.
An appellate court in the city of Novi Sad in northern Serbia also made legal history this week when it fined a man for discriminating against his gay colleague. It's the first ever verdict in the Balkan nation against workplace bias based on sexual orientation. The court ordered the defendant in the case, known only by the initials DK, to pay 180,000 dinars, that's about $2,100, to the plaintiff, known only as MA, for what Balkan Insight called mental suffering and violating his personal rights, reputation, and honor. Defendant DK was also ordered to pay 99,000 dinars in court costs to the Gay Straight Alliance, which had brought the case. Entrenched homophobia is rampant in Serbia. Only 26% of respondents in recent polling believe that the state should protect the rights of gay and lesbian people, while 62% were opposed. Recent pride events in the country have been banned because of so-called security concerns. And a far-right Serbian leader whose death threat